Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hello and welcome, you amazing humans. Welcome to another episode of Mysteries with a History, where I'll take you on the wild ride into the unknown, the strange, and the mysterious. Like you, I have questions, and like you, I want answers. A quick announcement: on Saturday, I launched the Project Eyes on the Skies page on my website. This is a portal where witnesses to UFO sightings can upload their videos and photos, as well as a report to my cloud, where I will then enhance and analyze a submission to tease out any extra details. Just head on over to my website called paradigmshifts.blog and click on the link at the top of the webpage for more information. So I was originally thinking of doing an episode on Bob Lazar, like how Jamie Church mentioned, but I want to do that on another show when I have more time to learn about all the twists and turns in the ongoing saga, because there's definitely a lot to the story. So this week instead, I want to cover a mystery with a history that has popped up again and again, and whenever I'm trying to do any kind of research. It's a really curious story, and even though it's a real stretch for many, it's definitely a case that makes me wonder about how often something of this sort has happened. I mean, a scenario similar to that is when we see the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Again, I want to preface that this is old information. It's an old story. Yet for new young minds such as my own, coming into this topic and trying to get a handle on the history, it keeps popping up in various books and video features. And the case that we're going to be covering is the Holland UFO landing. How many of you have heard of this story? When I was trying to do research on this, it wasn't really that easy. There weren't many podcasts on it. There weren't really very few YouTube videos on it. There are a few books, but not many, at least the ones that I found. And let me kind of tell you, from the research that I have been doing for hours upon hours, this might be one of my favorite stories at this point in time. Now, could that change? Absolutely. But I'm really excited to share what I found when it comes to the story. So what is the story of the Holland landing? What do these kinds of aliens look like? And was President Eisenhower really involved? Because as we know, Eisenhower has come up quite a few times in my shows, and he seems like he has a heavy hand in this topic when it comes to UFOs. So was he involved in this? A quick thing I want to mention is Jimmy Church has let me know he's going to be delayed coming on today, as he has unexpected, very busy with the project, and hopefully he will be able to join me later, but we'll go ahead and see as the show plays out. Okay, So, this landing allegedly took place in 1955 in Holloman Air Force Base, which is very close to the White Sands Missile Testing Range near Alamogordo, New Mexico. And as I have mentioned before with previous shows, the 1940s to like the 1960s, 1970s maybe, is when we see or when we hear a lot of these UFO sightings. There are countless stories right during this time, kind of during the nuclear time. So that date, 1955, is a very, very important date, and especially because the Holloman Air Force is very close to the White Sands missile testing. So keep that in mind as we go along with this story. Now, there are actually two landings in Holloman, New Mexico, not just one that we're going to cover, one with Eisenhower, but there are two, and they get more interesting as the story goes along. So we're going to go through it as this show progresses. Based on some witness testimonies, these beings that were involved were small but humanoid looking, with straight slit mouths and no chin, kind of like a gray, very similar. They had hands with about four fingers, right? Very long and thin, webbed fingers as well, and dark claw-like nails. That one's kind of interesting. But the most prominent thing about them was their noses. They were large, hooked noses, kind of like the descriptive references you would see when researching the appearances of the Anunnaki. Is there a connection between these hooked nose grays and the Anunnaki? Are they a hybrid? We don't know. But that's a very interesting thing to point out, is how prominent their noses were compared to the rest of their face. Now, there are a lot of layers to the story. You have the before, the during, and the after. And hopefully we'll be able to cover it all today, because there's a lot to the story. The next question I asked at the very beginning was Eisenhower involved with this UFO landing, the first one in 1955? Well, in February of 1955, Eisenhower stated to the press that he was going to go away for a few days to visit the Treasurer's Plantation in Georgia to go bird hunting. After about an hour of being there, he ended up getting the sniffles. And I'm putting those in air quotes, the sniffles, okay? 24 hours later, he ended up in the Holloman Air Force in New Mexico, okay? So he was in Georgia just for a few hours, and then 24 hours later, he got to the Holloman Air Force. Well, how did he get there? Anyways, well, we know obviously by a jet. But then Eisenhower was out of the press for 36 hours. And the press secretary then stated, oh, well, you know, after Eisenhower went hunting, he ended up getting the sniffles. And that's why I put that in air quotes, because allegedly, it seems like that was actually a cover-up, because he wasn't in the public eye for 36 hours. And he ended up being at the Holloman Air Force. Manuel Kirkland, he was the Air Force medic and witness at the Holloman Air Force, stated that when the president's plane landed, a craft of unknown origin lands right next to him. Okay, so someone was able to witness this. And he's a prominent figure. He was an Air Force medic. He wasn't just some random guy, okay? I quickly want to say hi to everyone in the live chat, and especially to all my moderators like AlienGirl111 and Zenza Bill. Thank you, all of you, for being here and being interested in this story. I have so much enthusiasm, and I'm so happy that you guys are listening, and hopefully you'll get the same kind of fire as I do. But again, this is only an alleged story. We simply don't know if it's true or not. But regardless of that, it is so good to have this kind of information in the back of our minds when we're doing any kind of UFO research, because it is a really great foundation when it comes to this topic. So I want to say thank you to everyone once again. So Manuel Kirkland, again, was an Air Force medic, and he witnessed a craft of unknown origin landing right next to Eisenhower's plane when they landed at the Holloman Air Force in New Mexico. And this is the wild part about this story. When both these crafts landed, Eisenhower's jet and this other craft, it says, allegedly, Manuel says that the president actually entered this UFO for about 45 minutes. We've heard countless UFO stories. I mean, one of them being the Carl Higdon one, when he's encounters an alien and he enters the craft and the aliens take him to their home planet. And that one sounds incredibly bizarre. You're like, there's no way that story could possibly be true. But the fact that the president of the United States is entering a craft, that puts it in a whole different perspective. It makes you question, is this real or absolute nonsense? Well, there was a witness to see President Eisenhower enter this craft. And that's why the story is so interesting. Because, yes, you can have regular military officials. Yes, you can have random people, hunters, runners, right? Because the runners are always the ones that find the dead bodies, right? But average people, it's a whatever story. But the president, oh my gosh, it adds just a whole other layer to the story. So, allegedly, he was in the plane for about in the UFO for about 45 minutes, and then he exits like nothing happens. It was stated by the witness that there was another UFO hovering over the one that was landed, and to his eyes, it seems like the UFO that was hovering over it was kind of protecting the area of where the meeting was. Why do you think that is? Do you think maybe they don't really trust the government, right? Or is it because it's just protocol? Or they just want to enjoy the view from the sky? I'm just kidding about the last one. But there are endless possibilities to why they were actually two crafts instead of one. And he just believed, right? Because again, we don't actually know if Eisenhower did have this meeting with aliens. It could have been a foreign adversary for all we know. But Manuel Kirkland truly believed he was having a meeting with extraterrestrials. But how accurate can that be? Later, after his meeting, Eisenhower talks to about 250 personnel around the Air Force and said, "I was never here. This never happened. Go off and do your day, and everything is absolutely classified. You saw nothing." Which seems like a very, very common theme throughout a lot of these kinds of stories. Oh my gosh, I almost lost my place. So there is that. John Music says, "It's been said before that Eisenhower's families later on confirm that the story is true." Oh my gosh, I gotta catch that. Because we know that Laura, Eisenhower's great-great-granddaughter, I think it's like three generations, does also believe that Eisenhower's encounters were incredibly true as well. Do we know if that's the case? That would be kind of awesome if that was the case. Laura said her grandpa president was missing for a full day at the White House. Well, Renee, wow, that's... Could you imagine? I mean, also the White House is ginormous. It's very... I could understand if someone gets lost. So after Eisenhower's meeting for about those 45 minutes, he goes back to Georgia. And some reporters and journalists noticed something odd about him, that he looked a little too tired when he was supposedly having a restful hunting vacation for the time being. It's like, you shouldn't look that tired if it's meant to just be a relaxed time doing casual hunting. So there was allegedly some suspicion by the journalists of having questions on why is the president so sleepy looking. And then a few days after this meeting, allegedly it's also believed that there was nuclear testing done just nearby the Holloman Air Force. Renee says, she said on her live show that Gramps Press was supposed to show up at the presidential dinner engagement, but was missing from his bed for a full day. I definitely want to get Laura on the show. If any of you guys have connections, it would be amazing to get her insight on the story. But I also heard she's very hard to get a hold of. So there is that story with Eisenhower. It's very brief. There are not a ton of details on this encounter with Eisenhower. And some people think it just ends there, that Eisenhower had this meeting with UFOs for about 45 minutes and it ends. Hopefully in the near future, we'll have a whole episode just on Eisenhower and his stories, because there is a lot to go through with him, but we're not going to be covering all that today. So then that leads to the second landing at the Holloman Air Force. And this took place in 1964. So just about 9 years after Eisenhower had met them and had the meeting on the UFO. And this story because this one is a little bit better documented. We're going to go deep into it, but this one's incredibly interesting. So as mentioned at the beginning of how these beings looked, right? Hooked nose, kind of gray, slit mouths. That the public didn't know about what these beings looked like until after 1964, when military officials recorded these beings, and when they were able to have a more in-depth meeting compared to just 45 minutes. And now you're probably thinking, well, how did this information get out to the public? We're about to get into that. That's the best part. But again, it's allegedly stated that these beings had an odd, gray complexion. They had a very pronounced hooked nose, kind of like the Anunnaki. They wore tight-fitting jumpsuits. They had thin headdresses that appeared to be some kind of communication devices. And in their hands, they held, it seemed like a translator. Was it? It might have been, if these military officials are telling the truth and saying that's how they were able to interact through these translators. But for the general public, we simply don't know. And yeah, so at the Holloman, so we're talking about the Holloman Air Force Base. For those that are just joining in, let me go ahead and kind of show you a picture of what I'm talking about. Let me share my screen. Share. Okay, here it is. All righty, look at that. So you're having these military officials right here from the encounter in 1964 interacting with these hooked nose grays, and there is their saucer right in the back. Look at that. And here's a more close-up photo of how they could possibly look like. And this is from a drawing based off the reports and placed in the book and in the movie UFOs Past, Present, and Future, which we're going to get into a little bit more. Okay. So then, because this story has been written out quite a few times after 1964, Jacques Vallée heard this story and he says, oh my goodness, this is incredibly interesting. Let me write a book on this case along with several other cases called Revelations. And this was written in 1991. He goes into many details and hidden secrets, but one of them was about this alleged contact with what are nicknamed the hook-nosed grays. And that's why I've been constantly referring it to that, because of Jacques Vallée's book. And it also kind of went into detail in some sense of their activities here on Earth. It was alleged from Jacques Vallée's sources that these aliens signed a contract to be able to abduct and to do cattle mutilations in exchange for advanced technology. Okay, so it seems like, right, allegedly Eisenhower signed a contract and he said, if you give us advanced technology, you can go ahead and abduct people on Earth and do cattle mutilations. It was stated that these kinds of greys were doing it for medical examination and to study our human civilization. But when the human government asked for the people to be documented on who these aliens take, the Greys never did that. So they felt kind of lied to and cheated, right? The humans, by saying, well, you said you were going to go ahead and document the people that you take, but you haven't. So that was a little bit of a mishap, kind of already entering muddy water. And then the book explains their anatomy. Jacques Vallée was able to get his hands on a witness that was able to talk about the anatomy of these hooked nose greys. And it stated that their hearts and their lungs functioned as one organ, and their stomachs were atrophied. So they kind of eat or consume the way that plants do. They create chlorophyll, and they are able to absorb nutrients from the skin and excrete from the skin as well. Now, we have gone into this in another show talking about, because there are different types of greys, and these are just one of them, but it seems like, based off of alleged witness testimonies, some beings, such as the Greys, can go ahead and absorb nutrients through the skin. John has a question. Thank you so much for the $15 super chat. And he says, quick side note, DeLong's made some big admissions this past year or more. Says he found out the real truth is very scary, disturbing. What do you think? He says high ups already decided disclosure is coming. Now, this is probably awful to say, but I don't really follow DeLong that much or Academy to the Stars. So that is news to me. I haven't heard that, but he says higher ups already decided disclosure is coming. That's a very interesting statement, and we're actually going to kind of cover this a little bit more as we progress through the story, because what is disclosure? What does it mean? And is it happening already with the TV shows, the movies, and the media that we are exposed to when it comes to aliens? We're literally about to cover that right now. So thank you so much, John. Here is the aftermath on the story. Again, you had Jacques Vallée write this book in 1991, talking to witnesses about these hook-nosed greys to go ahead and get better details on the story. But there is another man who also went very, very deep into the story. And his name was Robert Emmenegger. Now, try to say that three times fast, because it took me a while to try and learn his last name, Emmenegger. He is the director of the film UFOs, Past, Present, and Future that got released in 1974. So about 10 years after the second landing at the Holloman Air Force Base. Why am I telling you this? You're going to see why, because, oh my gosh, it's so interesting. So let me just give you a little bit of background information on who Robert Emmenegger is. He graduated from UCLA in the mid-50s. And he had a thesis explanation, or really just a question. And he was trying to research the influence of motion pictures on public behavior. Kind of like what we see today, what could possibly be soft disclosure, as the TV shows Debris, as maybe the comedy TV show Resident Alien, Invader Zim, things of this nature. So he, in the mid-50s, 1950s, right, a while ago, he was trying to understand the influence of motion picture on public behavior. Ryan, the story is so great. So happy you're covering it. Ryan, I'm actually going to talk about a book that you wrote the foreword to, written by Paul Blacksmith, Blake Smith, I think. So I'm really happy you're here because I read it and it's incredibly fascinating story. So I'm happy that you're able to show up. So the young Emenegger was particularly interested in how cinema could be used as an instrument of propaganda. Now, we know after World War II and even during World War II, this is when propaganda kind of became known to the public, like what it was and how it worked, okay? So then you have Emenegger trying to understand how cinema can be an instrument for propaganda. Additionally, Emenegger had spent a year working for the United States Information Agency, also known as the USIA, a politically correct name given to the government's long-running propaganda agency. That's pretty interesting, right? And this information is from several sources that I've read and books as well. So Emenegger had also performed duties for President Richard Nixon. And in December of 1968, the then president-elect wrote to Emenegger seeking his active participation and assistance in finding exceptional individuals worthy of appointment in his incoming administration. Nixon referred to Emenegger as a leader and in position to know and recommend the best minds in America. Now, why is Nixon going out to a typical film director? Those are air quotes because he's not just that. He's a lot more than that. Why is Nixon going to Emenegger and saying, I want you to appoint the absolute best? Best for what? What do they have in mind? Well, the film that he made and the book, UFOs, Past, Present, and Future, has quite a few layers onto why the movie was created and exactly what it covers. In all of this, in absolutely all of this, when it comes to Robert, is his film all propaganda? Right? Because he's given permission by Nixon. The movie that he created was help from multiple and only military personnel. But for what? What is he covering? Well, he's covering the Holloman Air Force Base landing in 1964. But why? Why is the government giving this guy so much freedom? Well, I wouldn't say freedom, but so many connections to this story. He was given footage. Well, he was waiting to be given footage to materialize. Emenegger and his crew continued with their wider production research, for which they were given unprecedented access to the DOD facilities since this movie was funded by the DOD. That's another thing. This film, UFOs, Past, Present, and Future, was funded by the Department of Defense. And there is more to that. Not only was it funded by them, okay, but Emenegger was given permission or even clearance to look deep into the story, as well as NASA, the Army, and the Navy gave their full backing to the UFO-themed production. What the heck, guys? What the heck? Of course, we have heard a few stories that are somewhat similar, but really not even close. Why was this film being given so much help, so much clearance that the Army, the Navy, the DOD, and NASA gave this man full backing to this UFO-themed production when in the 1960s, the 1950s, yes, you had Project Blue Book, but the whole purpose of Project Blue Book was to keep the public at ease, saying, no, there are no UFOs here. There's all a simple explanation to the things that you're seeing. If it's not Venus, it's definitely swamp gas. If it's not swamp gas, it's probably just an owl on a tree trunk. And all of these kinds of interesting explanations during this time. So why was he given permission and even being pushed enthusiastically to create this film? I have so many questions. I have so many questions to this. And let me just go a little bit more deep into that. So was this film propaganda? Was Emmenegger being used to create this film, put it out to the public as disinformation, or to lead the attention somewhere else, all of these things? Emmenegger, at one point after the film was released, he did feel used, and we're going to go why into that a little bit later. But there were moments at the end where he's like, none of this. Why am I given so much permission? And that's why I really enjoy this story so much, because it leads to these kinds of questions. Why was he given so much permission? Why is the government letting all of this happen? Okay, so I'm asking the same question over and over again because it's so darn interesting. And still in the 1950s, after World War II, right after Roswell, and that was trying to be a huge cover-up, that's when this Holloman landing, the second one, happened soon after, and then the film. All of these things are connected. Okay, I'm happy that we covered that, because, oh my gosh, there's just so much to it. So, as we continue with Emmenegger and his co-writer, or his crew member, Sandler, they were very curious about the manner that all of this was being laid out as. And they did have certain connections with Washington, D.C. to go ahead and get these kinds of clearances, things of this nature. And then he enters one of the buildings of the Pentagon, and he says, so I was tipped off by someone to go ahead and interact with you, to go ahead and meet you and ask you about the Holloman Air Force Base in 1964. Now, Emmenegger, he was expecting the person he was speaking to saying, oh, I've never heard of it. I have no idea what you're talking about. Obviously doesn't exist. But that wasn't the case. This man goes into his bookshelf, pulls out paperwork, pulls out the film, pulls out photos, and hands it over to Emmenegger and says, yeah, you can go through it. Yeah, it really did happen. Check it out. Of course, he wasn't able to take that home with him because this was in the Pentagon, but he was able to see it with his own eyes. More questions. So many more questions. Why was this guy given practical clearance to go ahead and look at this information with it not being hidden from him? And in all of this, it included the footage that was filmed in 1964 of the military personnel interacting with these hooked nose grays. And that's how we're able to get the description of what they look like, having hooked noses, wearing the suits that they were, having a translator in their hand, things of this nature. And when he was tipped off by the DOD and by the Pentagon, they said, we want you to use this quote when you are showing this film in your video, we're going to give you this authentic film to put in your movie. You're welcome. But you must add this quote. It says, "An actual contact that might occur in the future, or perhaps had already occurred." Being very ambiguous, right? Leading to your own assumption, did it happen? Or is it going to happen in the near future, right? Because this film that was in 1974, we could have these kinds, well, you couldn't have these kinds of conversations, but you could add those kinds of phrases and people could go ahead and think for themselves. So between aliens and the U.S. military, where was all this, like, where? Where was this happening? Why was this happening? Well, at large, this isolated base took place somewhere in the desert, like at the Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico. Now, there was also a man by the name of Paul Shatrill, who was a security manager and a chief for the audiovisual program at Norton Air Force. And he told Emenegger about this film. And that's why Emenegger went ahead and went to the Pentagon to go ahead and ask for the footage because of Paul. Now, why was Paul given clearance to talk to Emenegger? But this is very, very classified information, right? We all know that UFOs are very, very classified information. Why would he just casually tell a director, yeah, so there's this footage and you should go to the Pentagon and go ask for it and, you know, see what they say. Hum, num, num, num. Was it all planned? Did someone tip off Paul to tip off Emenegger to make this film? Because as we know, it was funded by the DOD. John, wow, thank you so much. He says, also, seems like the conclusion that the documentary Jimmy discussed at night is similar to the DeLonge direction of the real truth, that non-humans control humanity and that they're using genetic manipulation to gradually make all our children hybrids more and more. Well, my question would be for DeLonge and for the documentary Jimmy discussed is where are they getting that information from? You know, that's a very, very loaded statement, right? And of course, as some people might think that's an absolute possibility, for myself, I would definitely need more information to go ahead and place my own opinion on it. Yes, there are many stories of people being abducted, having their eggs or their sperm extracted, right? And they're able to create hybrids. And then these parents go back onto this craft and are able to actually meet their hybrid children. Of course, these are all alleged witness accounts. I don't know. I've never spoken to one personally, but I have heard countless stories. Now, for them to genetically make all children hybrids, again, that's a very, very loaded statement. And we can spend a whole episode on that because some ancient alien theorists believe, allegedly, that in a way, all the humans that are currently on Earth are hybrids when the Anunnaki came and enslaved the race to go ahead and mine gold. Again, these are just alleged counts. There are a bunch of these kinds of stories, but it's not something I have placed a lot of attention on just because I definitely need more factual evidence to go ahead and really, really look into. Back to this film. So we've covered quite a bit of it. And Emenegger, he wanted to go ahead and bring his crew in to the Pentagon. He's like, I want to go ahead and I want to interview people and I really want to make this film fan-flippin-tastic. But here's one of my favorite parts about this story. So the first request to film there was met with utter disbelief when they wanted to film inside the Pentagon. So when Emmenegger enters, the military personnel says, "You want to come in here with a camera? This is a classified facility. Do you realize how long it would take to get clearances on everyone on your crew? You know how long that would take?" Obviously, an incredibly long time, at least in the 1970s. So Sandler called his Washington contact to report the difficulty and then expected to change the schedule, right? So maybe waiting more time or something like that. But as soon as he calls that Washington contact, on the other side of the phone, they say, "We'll fix that. Not a problem," was the exact response. And the next day, the Holloman Air Force Base calls back and they say, "So, Emmenegger, what would you like to bring your crew in?" And Mr. Slander, when do you want to bring your crew? The clearances were all taken care of in just one day. Now, I don't know how many people needed to get clearance on his crew. It doesn't say, but the fact that it's probably a few people and it just got done in a day, probably in less than 24 hours, you need to have some really, really heavy, strong connections to be able to do that. Charles, thank you so much for the two. And he says, hashtag Christina JRE 2021. Bro, that would be interesting. I think I might be a little bit terrified, but it would be really cool to be on the Joe Rogan Experience. So after all these clearances are made, after he's able to get the crew in everything, last minute, the very, very last minute, Slander and Emmenegger expected to get supplied with the actual footage because they had already seen it, but they wanted to obtain it and put it in their film UFOs Past, Present, and Future, as they were told that they could, because again, everyone that was helping them with the film were only military officials. It was funded by the Department of Defense. It was backed by NASA, the Air Force, the military, the Army, and the Navy. And they were all pushing for this film to happen. All they needed to finish their film was the footage, the actual footage of when these hook-nosed grays landed and interacted with the military personnel. But it never materialized. And the documentary had to show standard animation instead. So after all of that hype, after the excitement they were going to get for the actual authentic footage, last minute, Darman says, "I'm just kidding. Yeah, it's not going to happen. I simply cannot give it to you," because during this time, it is rumored that this is, again, another allegation that a reason to why they were not given this footage last minute was because this was around the same time as the Nixon Watergate scandal. And they said, no, there's too much going on. I simply cannot give you this footage. You're going to have to go ahead and just do a standard animation. You know, you go ahead and attempt to make it work. So they had to do drawings of the so-called aliens as the pictures that I just showed you a little while ago. And regardless, the film was still released even without the footage that was promised by the government. It's kind of heartbreaking, don't you think? You're so excited. You want to do all these things. And then the government's like, "Psych. Sorry. I'm not even sorry." The guys weren't even sorry. They just said, "Oh, yeah, it sucks. Sucks to be you, really." This film ended up being a Golden Globe nominated documentary. That'll lead me to another question. But before we continue with this story, I quickly want to mention that Lou Elizondo is going to be joining me here on Friday, okay? And pretty much I went on all social media platforms and I said, put in your questions. Put in the questions that you have for Lou Elizondo. And I got quite a few, but a lot of these were actually really good questions. People that really put in these questions have seen countless of his interviews. So for people that can't interact with him, I really want to help you guys have your questions be asked. So I just want to tell you, do not forget to hit the bell so that you do not miss the show with Elizondo on Friday at 6 PST. And also want to mention first to all my Patreon supporters, thank you so much for supporting me. You're able to give me a camera, an amazing mic, background, pay for the Wi-Fi, all of these things. And for those that are interested in being a Patreon supporters, you get a ton of goodies back, like behind the scene footage, videos, and also the graphics that I make for my videos. I can make those for you as well when you become a Patreon supporter. Another thing is I have started college yet again. The semester has started. So if I'm not everywhere at once like I used to be, please forgive me. School is going to be a lot. It's going to be a lot this semester. And I'm going to be launching new shows as well. I honestly have like quite a few announcements, but I'm also going to be launching new shows that are coming up that are going to be completely different to this one that you're seeing now, Mysteries with the History and Shifting the Paradigm. They're going to be different. They're going to be exciting. And if you want to support this channel, support my work, please do, because it definitely goes a long way. It really, really does. Back to, oh my gosh, Akashi Chris, thank you so much for the $5 super sticker. Woohoo! Thank you. So back to Eben Edgar's film. So it ended up getting released in 1974. And then it got nominated for the Golden Globe documentary. Like it had a Golden Globe nominated documentary. That leads me to another question. We already asked, was this film propaganda, right? Because it was being fed by the DOD. Now it got nominated for a Golden Globe. At least, what's going on? is there like a secret hand behind? I don't know. This is merely speculation. Thank you so much, Charles, for the $2. Woohoo! Please get Lou to reveal the radio frequency used to attract UAP. That's an interesting question. If you can go ahead and email that to me so I don't lose it here, please do. If you really want that question to be asked, email it to me. And you can find the link in my Beacons page along with all my other social media. Okay. In the end, after it was filmed, it got nominated, and it's believed by certain people that even though they didn't get the full footage by the DOD on this authentic video, it's said that there are a few seconds of the real footage. Now, how true is that? I guess we could only ask Eben Edgar that. We can only ask him. In the absence of the landing footage, Eben Edgar was forced to include an animated reconstruction of the event as described to him by the USAF, complete with artistic renderings of the alleged aliens. The documentary presented the incident as one that might happen in the future, or perhaps could have already happened. Just like how they had said at the very beginning, we can go ahead and give you this film if you use this very ambiguous quote. And we all know the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. We know it. It's definitely one of our favorites in the UFO community. Now, what if I told you, allegedly, that this film was inspired by the Holloman Air Force landing, at base landing. What if I told you that? So in the book, President Eisenhower's Close Encounter by Paul Black Smith, written in 2020, and the foreword was written by Ryan Sprague. Shout out to him. For people that don't know who Ryan Sprague is, I definitely recommend that you subscribe to his YouTube channel because he has really solid content. So in the book, it states that the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind is rumored to be based off the Holloman landing, and Spielberg was tipped off by a personnel in the military to add it in the film. Pretty darn interesting. It seems like these directors kind of have like a hidden hand, maybe, possibly when it comes to their films. Who knows? There's quite a few conspiracy theories on it, but we're not going to go into that. Although we also know that with the Encounters of the Third Kind, that Alan Hynek was also helping with bits and pieces of the film. So not only did he have a tip off by a personnel in the military, but he also had Alan Hynek to go ahead and help with this film. And now that sounds kind of like a stretch. You're like, I don't know. I mean, yes, I like that movie. Spielberg is cool, but there's no way he could have that kind of tip off, you know, from a military personnel to create this film. Well, here is what could possibly make it a little bit more tangible for us to possibly believe. 35 years later, when the movie E.T. was released, and when the Reagans were able to see the film, that is when this story might have a little bit more validity. So at the end of the screening of the movie E.T., which is again a very, very heartfelt movie in the UFO community, we all love it. We're all like, oh, it's probably one of the best UFO movies out there. Well, the Reagans, especially Ronald Reagan, was visibly moved by the film, so much so that the president stood up, looked around as he composed himself, and then blurted out before many guests, including astronauts, stating, "We really enjoyed your movie. There are several people in this room who know that everything on that screen is absolutely true." Could you imagine? And it seems like there are quite a few presidents here and there that kind of drop these types of bombshells. And it just makes you question, like, how much do presidents really know? How much do presidents really know? Because they don't talk about it. And I would love to dedicate a whole episode to that, on presidents and their connections or their encounters with UFOs, because we have President Carter, Reagan, Nixon, Kennedy, Trump, Obama, Eisenhower, who have at some point mentioned UFOs in one form or another. So what's this all about? And why did Ronald Reagan like E.T. so much? But what do you guys think about this story altogether, the Holloman Air Force Base story landing, right? Because you have one in 1955, the other one in 1964, one to do with the president, Eisenhower, and the other one to do just with your average military personnel. And what do you think the connection is with these hooked nose grays with their very prominent noses and the Anunnaki? Do you think that there's possibly a link there? Do you think that maybe out there in space, there could possibly be interbreeding? So on and so forth. Why can't the same thing happen out there? But instead of the same beings on one planet, why not on multiple planets? This is just merely something that anyone could simply muse about when we have extra free time. We can just think about what's going on out there, and with the craft that they allegedly have that can easily go from one place to another, they could easily visit another planet, fall in love and have children that might not look like anything we know. So hopefully all of y'all liked the story, and I truly do want to hear your thoughts on this. And Terry Hall says, and Reagan told Spielberg during a viewing at the White House that only about three people in the room knows how true it is. The fact that anyone knew how true that movie is fascinating. Because when we see the movie E.T., we're like, oh yeah, it's a great kids movie. Yeah, yeah, it's really fun. Something that a lot of us grew up on. But to believe it to be 100% true, that's definitely a stretch, maybe for the average people, right? If you don't have these kinds of connections. John says, definitely a link to the Anunnaki, these hook-nosed grays. That would be interesting, right? It would definitely let your imagination run on what is their connection. Were they slaves, like how the stories are here on Earth? Right, when these us humans were slaves to the Anunnaki? Or is it some kind of interbreeding? Or is it something else altogether? These kinds of conversations, when you're doing your own research, I can easily lay in bed, not fall asleep, and just think about all the possibilities. All of them. Bobby Broadway says, if that military film was released of the UFO landing on the Salt Flats Three Forts, would act like Barney Hill under hypnosis. Total freak out. Oh my gosh, absolutely. And the Betty and Barney Hill story is insane. And I don't know if you guys know this, because I didn't know this for a while, but Betty Hill, when she was drawing the Zeta Reticuli map, everyone just thought it was like just a weird kind of drawing, but it wasn't until many, many years later when astronomers were able to understand exactly what she went ahead and drew. It's absolutely insane. Well, it seems like Jimmy Church must have totally rode back by the project he was working on. So for those who came to hear his input, I truly do apologize. I want to thank everyone for being here. Thanks for the super chats, and a huge shout out to all of my Patreon supporters and for everyone in the live chat. At 4 p.m. today, jump over to the Singularity Lab with Michael Mataluni and Luis Jimenez for their show. Finally, please join me again on Friday at 6 p.m. PST for the interview with Lou Elizondo. Do not forget to like this video, subscribe if you haven't already, and share it with those that have the same kind of interest as we do. And remember, keep your eyes on the skies.